Hey, everybody, what's going on? It's Rob Cesternino, and you are about to hear our Survivor voicemail podcast for this week with my friend Angie Kontz answering all of your Survivor voicemails about episode 9 of Survivor Worlds Apart. Before we jump into the voicemails, I got a quick promo for you for one of the other shows you could hear here on Podcast One. It's the Ross Matthews Show. Ross is talking to a bunch of different celebrities about all sorts of dating and relationship issues that you want to check out. So check out this promo for Ross Matthews, and then we're doing the Survivor voicemails with Angie Kontz.
Hello. Hi, it's me, Ross Matthews, America's gay. Listen, I get it. Life is hard. Okay, we all struggle. Boyfriend problems, girlfriend problems, job problems, life problems. Which TV show to watch? Honey, I get it. You need help. That's why I'm here. I'm the gay best friend you wish you had, and honey, you know you need. It's Straight Talk with me, Ross Matthews. This is tough love, honey, but it's worth it, like plucking or waxing. Get your weekly gay pep talk right here on podcastone.com.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's always looking for a podcast loophole, Captain Loophole, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rob Has a Podcast. This is our Survivor voicemail show. We broke it up into two this week, and this is part two of our big podcast recap. Of course, in part one, you heard from my good friend Jonathan Penner here on the podcast. But today, we are going to be answering the Survivor voicemails and bringing in another great friend of the show. You hear her at the beginning of all of the seasons when we talk about her casting types. Here she is back on the podcast. It's Angie Kontz. Angie!
Woo! Hey, Rob. How's it going?
Angie, very good to have you here on the podcast. Back, we talked to you in the preseason. And finally, we can catch up with you, hear how your types have gone, and then also get into all of the voicemails from Rob Has a Planet.
That's very exciting. I'm super stoked.
Good. Very excited to have you here back with us. Of course, we've got all of our Survivor coverage for the week. Josh Wigler filled in for me with Stephen Fishback on Survivor Know-It-Alls. And then we did our exit interview with Joe and then already with Penner. So this is, we're going on to what, hour 3 and 4 of the Survivor coverage for this one episode?
Something like that. It was all very good stuff too. I thought Josh did an excellent job.
Yes, he did. As not, always.
Not that we're not happy to have you back, but I thought Josh really, really hit it out of the park. And the Penner cast was awesome as always.
Yes, Penner was very good. And I'm sure that there's no pressure on you now to keep it going.
Oh, of course not. Following Penner, that's like a cakewalk.
Yes. All right. So here is Angie. And Angie, before we get into talking about Survivor, how have you been?
I've been doing really, really well. Really well. I'm really excited about some projects that I'm doing. And no, life is really, really good.
Wow. Good projects?
Yeah. No, I'm working with Josh Wigler to do a really fun video project on The Walking Dead for post-show recap. So that's coming really soon. So yes. I'm excited about that for sure.
Probably many people don't know this about you, but you are a huge Walking Dead and Daryl Dixon super fan.
I am. I am a huge Walking Dead. I don't do anything in small measures. I'm all in. So yes, when I watch a show, I really watch a show. So yeah, that's about me too. And I'm also planning this summer to do a huge Big Brother binge watch. Because as you know, when we met, Rob, I was a Big Brother virgin.
Yes.
I was, and you convinced me to give it a shot. So I got.
It's a gateway show, Angie. Be careful.
It is, and I remember you saying, show. If you are in fact a strategy slut, I don't know why you're not watching Big Brother. And I remember saying to you, we're talking about the show with the chicken suits, right?
Yes.
And I got caught up on Big Brother Canada, and that was kind of my gateway into it a bit. So
and Big Brother US now.
I watched 16 when it was live, when all you guys were watching it, and I have not watched a single other Big Brother US season. So I only know maybe 5 winners out of all them. So I'm going to do a huge binge watch, and I'm going to try and apply my character type system to Big Brother.
Okay, very good. Now, starting with Big Brother 16, that's probably not a good gateway into Big Brother.
No, probably not. I find the Canadian ones really, I don't know. It just seems like the players overall were a lot more knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Than the ones that I like Pow Pow or whatever from season 16. And they, I don't know. I think I really learned a lot very quickly from that 2.5 seasons so far.
Yeah, I think going into Big Brother 16 first would be a little bit like showing a Survivor fan Survivor One World as the first season that, like, hey, here's a show that I really love. Here's Survivor One World. And you're like, okay, well, this one person, Kim, was really good at Survivor, but I don't know what the attraction is about the rest of these people.
Well, I mean, I had already seen seasons 1 and 2 of Canada before I saw that. So I did have that as a bit of a background, which helped me realize that Derek was playing the best game and everybody else was pretty clueless.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not spend too much time on Big Brother before the comment section on Rob as a website explodes. Let's get into it. Of course, we're going to take your voicemails. They come to us every week on the podcast. RobIsAWebsite.com/voicemail, or you can phone them in at 323-282-RHAP. And of course, we had a couple days where usually we do these all on Thursday, but now we had a couple days because I came home from the podcast awards and we're recording this on a Saturday. And Angie, what's your take on this? So there's been some people who say, yes, the shows should be split up into two. Other people say, leave it as one. Do you have a take on this as a podcast listener?
I actually prefer them split into two.
You like them in two. Okay.
Yes. I find them to be very different shows. And I don't take any pleasure in feeling like I've run a marathon of podcasting when I see that there's like a 3.5 hour podcast. Sometimes I want to listen to the voicemail part before the recap. Yeah, I do. It's true. Like I've listened to Mike Bloom, but I haven't listened to Sophie yet, for example.
Wow.
Okay. And like the social media part is one of my favorites. So, because that's really at the end. So when I see 3.5, I'll sometimes jump to the voicemail section, and it's a completely different tone as well. I find them very different shows, and I feel like the voicemail section has more breathing room when it's separate. I like it separate. I mean, I could do it either way, but if I had to choose one, if you're giving, you know, if we're doing the Rafe's choice here, I go with split them up.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that I may, you know, get into a little more, crowdsourcing of whether or not you guys want it one way or the other. I think for the rest of this season, I'm going to keep it as is, but maybe for the fall, we look into sort of splitting it up. I think that Taylor Cotter made a great point in her plea of to split it up, says that, you know, there should be a hashtag for each guest. She said, if Arlie got a hashtag on his interview, Sophie should have a hashtag on her interview too.
Yes.
Okay. So, let's go ahead and jump into this. And I know that there is a subject that you want to talk about, and Ariel cues that subject up nicely. So here is Ariel with our first voicemail of the week.
Hi, Angie and Rob. This is Ariel. It seems as if there are many goats this season and not too many powerful goat herders. So my question is there a preferable type of goat to take along with you when you have many to choose from? And are there others that should just always be put out to pasture if you have options? Is there a character type that ends up being a goat more often than not? Thanks. And Rob, congrats on the podcast awards.
Thank you, Ariel. All right, let's talk about goats, Angie.
I love talking about goats.
Yes.
And you know what? When you start thinking about a goat, I mean, you really have to consider the HF rules, like, don't be a weirdo. Don't be annoying. Don't be inconsiderate. You'll do okay. You know, when you look at it that way, that's a really great way to kind of categorize who makes a good goat and who doesn't.
Like this?
Don't be a weirdo. Don't be annoying. Don't be inconsiderate. You'll do okay.
Yes. That's
exactly like that.
You'll do okay.
You'll do okay. And, you know, and maybe add like the Penner's addition to the HF rules, which is, you know, don't be diabolical. I think that, I don't know, I think that goats are made by their running mates as well, you know, so you really need to consider who you're going to be sitting beside when you're trying to determine who's a good goat for you, you know, like what, like a know-it-all could never be a goat unless sitting next to an absolute golden boy, for example. So who will be at the end is going to be determine who's a good goat and who isn't. Like Rodney can be an excellent goat, but he needs to be sitting next to someone like Shireen. If he's sitting next to someone like Sierra, it could go either way.
Okay, so let's clarify this, because I feel like we haven't really talked about the different types of goats that you could have in the end. And I wonder if we brought this back to Survivor Redemption Island. I feel like Boston Rob was somebody who said that he wanted to have two different goats with him. He had one goat with him in Philip, who was the person that everybody hated and was the person that was going to tell everybody off. And he had that one type of goat. Too many goats. I tried a goat sound effect that I had never played with before. Maybe.
No, that's perfect. Okay. Well, I mean, there are really three kinds of goats. There's the annoying goat, the offensive goat, and the invisible goat.
Okay. And Boston Rob then also had Natalie, with all due respect to Nat 10, who was more of the invisible goat.
Absolutely.
So what do you say? You say there's annoying?
There's annoying, offensive, and invisible.
Offensive and invisible. Okay.
And all three of them can be excellent. The problem is sometimes either the annoying one or the offensive one, if they've also got some gameplay in them, you need to make sure that you have outplayed them before you sit next to them. That's the only thing there. And I would say in the annoying category, at this point, we got a little bit of the Shireen and we got a little bit of the Jen, and that's pretty much it. Maybe Rodney.
Mm-hmm.
This is just based on what the other players have said about them.
Okay.
The offensive category, we've got Dan.
Okay. Dan is offensive goat?
Yes, I would think so. And in the invisible category... in the invisible category, we have Will and Sierra. So any number of those, and I'm not saying all those are goats. I'm saying those are the possible, like that's the short list. Now, Ariel was also asking about the character type system. According to my system, I ran these numbers this week. By far the best goats are people who aren't even in the game anymore for this season. And that's your Tough Old Broad, Little Red Riding Hood, and the Specialist.
Those are the best people to bring to the end if you want to win the game, not the people who will perform the best if they get to the end, correct?
No, those are the people that will let you win your $1 million.
Okay, that's very nice.
Yeah, so each one of those have, and I calculated this by determining who's come in second and third most often.
And who was Tough Old Broad?
There have been four Tough Old Broad goats, and that's Monica, Twyla, Sherry, and Missy.
Yes. Okay. Oh, so this is, you've given us the goat power rankings of, yes. Okay. So because Carolyn was the Tough Old Broad is the Tough Old Broad for this season, but no, we're not saying that she would be a great goat.
Carolyn is not. She's the mommy dearest. Nina was the Tough Old Broad. So all three of these character types are no longer even in the season. So we got to go beneath that. So those guys all were goats four times each. They were all excellent goats, those three character types. Based on who's left in the season in Worlds Apart, who's still playing, and who is the next best thing, believe it or not, the top of the list is the Heisenberg. Because if you have an offensive Heisenberg, which we do this season, like Russell was the goat twice and Jervis was the goat once. So Dan's not a bad choice as goats go.
Okay.
Chelsea Handler. Exactly. Chelsea Handler has also been the goat twice.
Yes.
This season's Chelsea Handler is Shireen. I would not bring Shireen to the final three. I think she's got a really good shot of winning if she makes it to the final tribal council. Do we know if it's a final two or three yet?
I'm working under the assumption it's a final three, but... You know, I don't think we've ever found that out for sure.
Yeah, no, I am too, but I'm not one of those people that can do the math working on the days and what day everything's happening and figure out what's going on with that. So I leave it up to people like you.
Yeah, the jury started with 11. So it's either a final two with a jury of 9 or a final three with a jury of 8.
Next best thing is the G.I. Jane, according to the character system, because Kelly Wigglesworth and Stephanie LaGrossa. Neither of those two ladies won. So that would put Sierra as a really good contender.
Mm, yeah.
After that, I mean, John McClane has come in second twice, but both times it could have really swung the other way. So I wouldn't trust Rodney in a final three as your goat, unless you have really, really outshone him. Cause that was Colby and Boston Rob who did that. And then you've got your mommy dearest. So Susie and Dawn were both excellent goats. But again, I don't think Carolyn's a really great contender for that because I think, you know, she has played a pretty hard game and there are a lot of very dangerous mommy dearest character types out there.
Okay. So to summarize, who are the goats that people should be looking for to take to the end?
In this season, I've got my power rankings as Dan is number one.
Okay.
Sierra is number two. Someone who's never made it into the final tribal council, which is Mr. Miyagi, Mr. Will. I have him as number three.
Okay. So those are the ideal people that you should go with. So you feel like Mike is set up particularly well here?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I do. And I don't know if we're going to be getting into like winner's power ranking later, but I have a whole scenario worked out for that. But yes, I think Mike is set up extremely well. Assuming that he knows which way the wind is blowing.
Okay. Yeah. So Mike is set up very good. All right. So let's go ahead. Then let's take a question since we're talking about Mike. And let's take this question, which is from Chris from Commerce, Texas.
Hey, Rob and Angie. This is Chris from Commerce, Texas. I was firmly in Steven's camp this week. But after Joe going home, who is basically dead in the water, Mike's edit honestly seems too good. His jugular is too exposed. Not for him to get the back-to-back exit a la Josh Canfield, Jeremy Collins style edit coming up. I mean, what do y'all think? Does it look like he's dead in the water?
All right, Angie, this is an interesting question because, you know, everybody's talked about, and Steven especially, has been very much driving the Mike winners edit train, okay? And it's not as powerful as the Twitter follower train, but he's driving that Mike winners edit train. Do you feel like, is the Mike winners edit train so powerful that it has to be a fake out? What do you think of this?
First of all, can I comment on how delicious that Texas accent is? Oh my God.
From Chris from Commerce, Texas? Wow.
Where did that come from? Oh my God. No, I'm a sucker for the Southern accent. That was really.
Well, Chris from Commerce, Texas is going to be thrilled to hear you say this, Angie.
I think Mike is playing the best game out there. I do have him at the top of my power ranking. I'm not a big believer in the winner's edit. I really try not to even think about that stuff because I see everybody chasing their tails around and it's never what you think. And I know that the editors are trying to fake us out, except the one time that they don't fake you out because it's, you know, you think it's a fake out. So it really is the real thing. And I think that way madness lies. I just don't even try and go there. Right now, I think Mike does have the numbers and he does have the majority within the numbers. And if he's smart enough to make his move at nine, like it has to happen in this next vote.
And what is that move that he has to make?
If Mike doesn't either take out Rodney or Tyler or someone from that side, because I see clearly like you've got Rodney, Carolyn, Tyler and Will against Mike, Dan, Sierra, Shireen and Jen. So I'm assuming that Shireen is able to really pull Jen to her side and that they are firmly on that side of things. If Mike doesn't target someone from that side, then it's an even split. And then he will have lost his opportunity. Now, whether or not Rodney and Mike actually target each other and take each other out, I think this game will be decided on the decisions made by the white collars.
Yeah.
I think it's up to whatever Carolyn and Tyler end up doing. And if they are smart, and I'm not sure they are. If they're smart, they're going to jump ship with Shireen and Jen.
You think that would be smart to go with Shireen? So you think form their own thing with Shireen and Jen or go to Mike's side of the numbers with...
I think once Mike targets someone from their side, they need to wake up and realize they're on the losing end of this.
Yeah.
And then they need to start making deals.
Is that this week or is that potentially after this week?
I think that's after this week.
Because I think that you're right, that this week is where the line is drawn in the sand. I think if Mike continues with the plan that he's going with of take out no collar, and if the next person voted out is Jen, I think that he's in trouble and that side is in trouble because we've seen, you know, you have this under the radar four, and I don't know exactly how under the radar they are. I mean, and when I watch the episode again, you know, Mike and Shireen are talking about this four. So yes. They're not totally cloaked or anything like that. Like people know that they exist. So is that four going to be dealt with this week? If they're not, we're going down to eight and it's a potential 4-4 tie. And I just don't know, like if you're somebody like Shireen, how loyal you're going to be to Mike's four if you could potentially swing and avoid playing the rocks at that point.
No, exactly. If Mike wants to stay alive, he's got to make his move this week, I think.
I think so, too. And so that really sets up a lot of interesting discussion. And I think a lot of that discussion is around Jen, who I think is going to still have a role to play this season instead of just like walking off or quitting into the sunset this season, because I talked about this briefly on the Penner show. I feel like that, you know, you have this Rodney 4, and then you have Mike's 3 with Shireen, and you have Jen in the middle. And I think that Jen is potentially going to be a swing vote this week. I want to play a voicemail here from Morgan Stradling.
Hey, Rob, this is Morgan Stradling. It was great seeing you at the New Media Expo, and congrats again on the 2 podcast award wins. Now, my question is about Jen. Jen has a horrible attitude. She wants to quit. And I was thinking there is no way that she can win in the end. But then I was thinking about Jenna, and Jenna was in a similar situation. She wanted to quit. She had a bad attitude, but she was able to turn it around. So do you think that Jen can turn it around? And if so, what path does she have to take to get there? And also, if Jen just wants to stay a stick in the mud and not care, does she even have a chance to win at that point? Thanks.
All right. I thought this is a very interesting comparison and one that I had been thinking about myself. And again, Morgan, great to see you in Vegas this past week at New Media Expo. So let's just talk about Jen and if there are any similarities to the winner of Survivor of the Amazon, Jenna Maresca. So one, okay, we have, she's very close with one of the other female players in the game, has a very close relationship with one of the other female players in the game that maybe goes beyond the game. She also gets very upset when
chocolate.
When one of
wants chocolate.
She desperately wants chocolate. She also, yeah, she's taking her clothes off at different yep. points in the game. She seems to not get along with the deaf person. That's she doesn't have she has there's a communications breakdown between her and the deaf person. Also, one of her friends gets voted out of the game, and then she talks about quitting the game. She wants to go home. She talks about taking the immunity necklace and giving it to one of her friends, and yeah. potentially if she gets voted out because of that, so be it. And I am thinking a lot about Jen and Jenna. Also, they have almost the same identical name.
Yeah, it's true. No, you nailed it. Absolutely. There's I think there are a lot of players that have boomerang back from a quit threat, you know, and there's a big difference between talking about quitting and actually quitting. Lots of players have actually said, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm done. Like Holly Hoffman did that. Don Meehan did that. And both of them went on and did very well in the game. I think she's what she's doing right now, if she does want to stay in the game, and maybe it's just almost subconscious at this point, what she's doing is actually brilliant because she's taking the target right off her back. It's what Zane wanted to do, if you recall. Like she's flipped herself from being one of the biggest threats in the game to being one of the most desirable people to keep in the game, because she's like, I'm not even playing anymore. I don't even want to be here anymore. I'm essentially a free vote until someone decides to get rid of me. So yeah, I can see her, finding new life in this game. As soon as she realizes that she actually has the potential of getting to the end, I think she's going to think that's pretty cool.
Okay, a couple of things to address with this. Now, one, what you're talking about, I think, is a very effective strategy, because the Survivor players around you or whatever reality game you're playing, they will tend to want to try to do the opposite of what they perceive you want to do. So if Jen wants to quit, the natural reaction of all the other players is like, well, let's make her stay, because she wants to quit. And this was used somewhat brilliantly by one of the greatest reality TV players of all time, Dr. Will, in his return to Big Brother in Big Brother All-Stars, when he told everybody at a power of veto ceremony, I hate all you guys. I want to go home. Please vote me out. But that was strategy. Let's not compare Jen to Dr. Will anymore for the sake of this conversation. But that's a great strategy to use. Now, for Jen, I don't know if she's so much a quitter as she is, and I think, like Jenna, maybe is just a front runner. And when the chips are down, it's like, okay, I'm going to be the next person voted out. I don't care anymore. I just want to go home. I just want to get out of here. But if somebody could show her a sliver of opportunity, I do think that she may change her tune.
I would absolutely agree. I don't think she's a master strategist by any means. I don't think any of this is on purpose. And I think being on the bottom is just really emotionally draining. Like, she's really sad right now. But I think that could pass really quickly. I mean, she's sad to have lost Haley. She's sad because she has bonded with these chickens and everyone keeps eating her little friends. I think that's going to pass. I just really hope she isn't super angry with Shireen for not voting her off. Cause you know, when Shireen turned to her at the end of Tribal and said, "I still have you," and Jen gave her the, "Yeah, great," kind of look on her face. I'm a little nervous about that. Because if there's a breakdown in that relationship, it will absolutely change the course of the game. Like if Shireen can't hold closely to Jen,
yeah,
then a lot of people are in trouble. Do you think Shireen made the right choice of choosing Jen over Joe?
Yeah, I think she did because, you know, sure, keeping Joe in the game is, you know, is one thing. You know, maybe it's a little bit of a distraction and creates chaos. But for Shireen, I think the bigger opportunity here was that Mike said, you know, this is a test that, you know, I want you to pass. And so I think getting in good with Mike, who's controlling one half of the numbers and potentially has an insurrection on his hands to deal with, and getting closer to Mike as an ally, I think that that was worth more than whatever it was worth to, you know, keep Joe around. And also Jen was her closer ally. So, you know, if Jen's not just going to walk out of the game, I think it's better for Shireen to keep her more trusted ally in the game and potentially gain the trust of Mike even more. And then you have Joe out of the game and, you know, he was a number that was on her side, but what are you going to do? I think it's better to have Jen still in the game for Shireen than Joe.
I would agree. The only concern I have about Jen is her unpredictability. Like, she seems to really love to just play with chaos a little bit and just screw things up just for the sake of screwing things up because she's not as invested in the game as everybody else. And that makes me nervous for Shireen because I just don't know what she's going to do. But I think Joe was just way too hot. I mean, ways than one. But, you know, because he had this huge target on him. So there's so much heat around him all the time. Now, if you're just standing next to him, you're going to get blown up, right? So I think she had to get rid of him for that reason alone.
Okay. All right. So let's stick with the subject of Jen. And let's take this question from Liz.
Hi, Rob. This is Liz from Bowmanville, Ontario. Do you think that Jen, a.k.a. Whiner Whiner Chicken Dinner, has seriously hurt her chances for Miss Survivor 2016 with her new Quits McGee attitude? Voters certainly haven't been kind to quitters before. Love to hear your thoughts. Bye.
Wouldn't it be Whiner Whiner Chicken Diner?
No, I think that's more bang on.
Okay. So, Angie, I wanted to pull the clip and I couldn't find it, but way back when in February, when you and I talked about this season and you predicted that the 2016 Miss Survivor would be
Jen Brown. That's right.
How are you feeling about that prediction here today? Do you think that come next February, she will be crowned?
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
She gave me pause this week. I was doing the facepalm for sure. But I think, I think she's going to pull it out in the end. I think she's going to be revitalized in the game. I think she's going to have a very active role to play. And I think ultimately she's still going to be a fan favorite. If she quits, she won't be by any means, but I have faith in her. I don't think she's quitting.
Okay. So you feel like you can flirt with quitting, but not quit and then not have the stigma of quitting stuck to you?
Depends if she drops the whiner whiner business in moving forward. If she's just constantly complaining, then no, that's no good to anybody. But you know, we've had some very didn't Morgan do a whole lot of complaining? I don't think that alone, you know, precludes you from being Miss Survivor. I think there's a lot more to it. And I think she's still got a shot in the game.
Okay, so we'll see. He still has a shot in the game or still has a shot for Miss Survivor?
I'm talking about Miss Survivor as a game.
Okay, so she's still
my horse.
She still has a shot. Okay, let's take another question here. And let's go and check in with Nate, who wants to ask a question about Shireen and her new strategy. Here's a question from Nate.
Hey, Rob, if you were going on a trip with Shireen, Would you let her get in the passenger seat and backseat drive? Or would you tell her to get in the back seat and let you drive? Congrats on the podcast awards. Winner, winner, pineapple pizza dinner.
Yes, pineapple pizza dinner for Nicole coming up. Okay, so this is what Shireen said about her strategy in the cold open. This was the last thing that we heard before we got to see the abbreviated title sequence. Here's what Shireen had to say.
Maybe I'm not in the driver's seat right away, but I'm in the passenger seat, backseat driving.
Okay, so would you rather be not in the passenger seat, but having Shireen in the passenger seat, backseat driving, or would you prefer to have Muffin be the one who's driving and you be in the back
seat? Get in the back seat and let me drive.
What would you prefer?
Muffin is nowhere near my car.
What? Why not?
Because I don't think I would benefit from that being in my ear. Shireen, yeah, she can sit in the passenger seat and backseat drive all she wants. I think Shireen and I are actually very similar people. So I think I personally would benefit from having that kind of counsel in my ear. I think Mike is definitely going to benefit from that. In fact, I have a feeling that the reason why, if there's tensions happening in the next episode, I think it's likely because Shireen has managed to kind of blow up Will and Rodney's spot. Like, if you remember, like, the reason why Tony started speaking llama in the first place. that was because he made a deal with Cass, and Cass blew up his spot by telling Wu exactly what he said, and Tony went crazy. That's what happens when people think that they're working behind the scenes and no one knows what happens, and then suddenly they're completely exposed. And I think Shireen working with Mike, or I think they're going to be astute enough to do that throughout the remainder of the game.
Okay, so you'd rather go, you're going on the road trip, so yeah. So Shireen is shotgun. But it is like, oh, no, turn there, turn left, turn left, turn left. No, you missed it. Turn left. Yeah. Got to go back. What are you doing? You prefer that to just being in the back seat and you don't even have to concentrate and Missy is going to be the one driving the car.
I'll get lost if it's just up to me. I need someone telling me what to do sometimes. And you know what? Her hands aren't on the wheel. I'm the one driving. She can squawk all she wants. If I don't want to turn, I'm not going to turn.
So would you go on the Amazing Race with Shireen?
Maybe I'm not in the driver's seat right away, but I'm in the passenger seat, backseat driving.
Yeah.
We would rock the Amazing Race. Shireen and I would win that in a friggin' heartbeat.
Okay. Now, do you guys have to go on Amazing Race Canada?
I don't think we can qualify for each other's amazing races. So that's a dream that may never come to fruition, but yeah.
But I feel like at least on Big Brother Canada, they're letting people from any country, like around, like, you know, just that, hey, I'm from here, but I'm in Canada. And so
they're citizens of Canada, Rob.
Yeah. But
it's not like it's not like Pilar is still Mexican. She's immigrated here.
Okay. All right.
That's what Canada's all about. So
yes.
I'm not just letting randos off I just got off the plane. I'm going to apply. Oh, wow. I got in. That's not what's going on.
All right. Well, it looks like there's a couple of randos at least on Big Brother Canada sometimes. But all right. So you and Shireen would go on the Amazing Race and you're going to let Shireen be the backseat driver from Shotgun. I feel like there's a better word that you need for if she's sitting in the passenger seat, but she's backseat driving.
Maybe I'm not in the driver's seat right away, but I'm in the passenger seat, backseat driving.
Would that be
she's
passenger
co-pilot.
Seat? Co-piloting.
It's my co-pilot. We'd road trip.
She's navigating, awesome. I feel yeah. like, more so yep. than backseat driving.
Yeah, it sounds in the passenger naggy. Seat. The idea of backseat driving is a little like naggy.
Yeah.
No one needs that. That's true.
You would think that would get on people's nerves.
Yeah, you'd be like, you know, just shut up, man.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, just shut up, man.
Yeah, what I would like to see is Dan and Shireen on the Amazing Race, Dan driving, and then Shireen in the passenger seat, backseat driving.
Oh, that makes my heart hurt just thinking about that. That would be so painful.
That would be, I think that would be a lot of fun.
You think that'd be good TV?
I know that would be good TV. Okay, so let's take this question from Drew, who wants to talk more about Shireen's plans.
Rob, this is Drew, longtime listener. Congratulations on the podcast award victories. I was just listening to the podcast with Pinner, and you guys talked quite a bit about Shireen's chances. And I think maybe you were underestimating what I think would be her best path If she can get Jen to connect with her and go with Mike, Dan, and Sierra, obviously Mike's plan is probably then to go to the final three with Sierra and Dan. But we've already seen that the girls were close to working together before. Why can Sierra, Dan, or Sierra, Shireen, and Jen get together, realize that Mike is going to win the game if he makes it to the end, and connect together and go to the final three? And I think if they get that done, Shireen is your winner of Survivor 30. Thoughts?
Okay, Angie. So we have a pretty clearly laid out plan here from Drew. Okay. And that is what Shireen needs to do this week is side with the blue collar people and Jen. Keep Jen in the game and then vote out the Rodney four, get down to five, pull in Sierra, and then have the three women left in Sierra, herself, and Jen vote out Dan, or I'm sorry, I think maybe then vote out Mike at five, and then maybe vote out Sierra or Jen or whoever. And then she can really, she can go to the final three with probably any of those people.
I agree with Drew 150,000%.
150,000%.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking. My only, because Shireen I have as my number two was in my power ranking. And it's exactly that scenario. The only issue with that plan is Sierra, because Sierra says she's on board when she's not on board. And that's why I'm saying it really, I think, will depend on Carolyn. I think Carolyn is going to really hurt herself by not wanting to work with Shireen, because she could easily put herself in that final three with Shireen and Jen if she jumps ship at the right time and bands together with those girls. So I really am hoping that Shireen tries to get Sierra and Jen to work together as a group. But I hope she pulls in Carolyn as that extra a cushion vote before it gets down to just the five of them. Cause I don't trust Sierra. I think she thinks that she actually has a chance against Mike and Dan, which would be a shame. I don't think Sierra really has a chance against anyone, frankly, but maybe Jen and Will, but that's not going to happen. So.
Okay. So let's just talk quickly about Sierra. I mean, you think that she would have a chance with anybody? Is there any way that we see DHWTFEB possibly win the game?
If there's a chance that she can somehow get to the end with Will, I mean, Will's really the only person with less chance of winning. But even he could possibly make an argument.
Yeah. I think that the only chance that she has to win is, I think she's got to like boat ride it, where I think that Rodney's side needs to like take advantage in the numbers and then vote out like the Mikes and Dans and everybody from the other side.
Yeah.
And then Sierra needs to like go on an immunity run. And then with Mike and Dan on the jury and, you know, people not liking, you know, Rodney, then she ends up being in, you know, winning the final four immunity and going to the end with like some combination of Rodney and Will, and saying, you know, I persevered, I want immunities. And I think that that's a chance that she'd have to win. But I think it's counterintuitive to whatever plan she has right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she could possibly win sitting next to Dan as well.
Yeah, because I could see her being good, even though she hasn't been great in the challenges so far. But I think she has sort of like that boatwright physique where I could see her like, let's say it's like some sort of like endurance challenge, which typically we haven't seen those be the final four challenges in some time. It's usually some sort of big obstacle course. But like I could see her doing well in a challenge like that.
I think she's done exceptionally well in the challenges. I'm shocked to hear you say that you thought that she doesn't perform that well.
I watched her in the last challenge from this week. That's the one that sort of stuck out in my head. And she's like going down the slide sideways and she didn't look particularly graceful in the water.
Yeah, no, that's true. But she was the final, what do you call that in the relay? She was the last leg.
Yeah.
She was the anchor. And that's, I think she was just stressed out and trying to get in the water.
She was the anchor or she was the rusty anchor.
A rusty anchor.
She didn't sink, which was a good thing. But yeah, she was really pulling up the rear there, which was, I think she was in a bit of a panic.
Okay.
But I think in everything else, I mean, she's been she's very athletic. And who knows, there could be some sort of like rodeo challenge at the end.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, okay. When she was throwing the rope, I thought this is pretty much as perfect as it gets for someone who does rodeo. And
yeah.
She got a couple of those rings in, so she did pretty well, I thought.
Okay. The challenge that Courtney won in China, was that like a rodeo challenge?
Didn't she just have to sit there and it didn't move? I don't think that happens much in real life with live animals.
Yeah, it's the opposite of rodeo. You have to stay as still as possible. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, but so for Shireen is crunching the numbers. And so it does seem like that there is a chance that she gets through. So here's Shireen talking about what she sees.
And I'm running the numbers constantly, and I've figured out this numbers loophole.
Okay, so do you believe, Angie, that there is a...
numbers loophole.
Is there a numbers loophole for Shireen?
I think there's always a numbers loophole if you're smart enough to find it.
Yes. I love the...
numbers loophole.
I mean, the numbers loophole, is that a thing, numbers loophole?
Well, I think what she means is I've thought of something that no one else is thinking of. And I can use this to my advantage and no one will see it coming. And I think there are thousands of those throughout the entire game. And I think if you're the person that's up all night rethinking and replaying and re-strategizing, you're the one who ultimately has the greatest advantage. And Tony was like that. He was the type of person that would stay up all night just thinking it through over and over and over and over. And Shireen's going to do the same thing. And she's going to be very compelling in her arguments to people.
Yes.
She has calmed down a lot. I don't think she is that annoying person that she was in the early days, you know? Okay. And I think that changes everything for her.
Yeah. I was wondering if Max was still in the game, do you think that he would have like, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's like, oh my God, we're on Survivor. And, you know, and it was like sort of the both of them and they were both sort of geeking out. But now it's day 24 yeah. And I'm sure it's still there. But I have to think it's like subsided to a degree of the like, you know, geeking out. I'm on Survivor to actually, you know, playing the game long enough to sort of like get your feet under you. Do you think if Max was there, he would have also been able to similarly, you know, calm down a little bit?
Not if they were still there together. I mean, you got to think like Shireen is really beat up at this point. And I think that's a lot of the reason why she's calmed down. Haley pretty much said, you're really annoying everybody. You need to calm down. So she did. Mm. And I think in the early days, it was mostly Max's fault. I mean, she does do that kind of nervous talking thing. And she is geeking out about being on Survivor and it's the monkey sex and just letting herself feel the experience to the extreme. But being there with Max was not to her benefit at all. They were like two nerds at like Survivor Con, all dressed up or naked in this case, talking like in character. And I'm sure everyone else was finding it like mind-bogglingly frustrating and annoying. And in particular, we saw that Tyler and Joaquin really didn't like her. So, I mean, after the tribe swap, people talk, new alliances form, they give each other information. I'm sure by the time the merge happened, like Shireen's reputation had preceded her and she was just dead in the water before she even stepped onto into that other camp, right? So she's coming from a place of extreme disadvantage. She doesn't have the numbers and there's this expectation before she even opens her mouth that she's going to be super annoying. But in another way, she can kind of turn to work this to her advantage because no one sees her as a threat. No one sees that Shireen has anyone working with her. She has no power in this game. And now she's completely calmed down. She's completely humbled. And she's just thinking clearly. And she could make She's going clear. And she could make it that unlikely alliance with someone like Mike. And
she's OTT. Sorry.
She could flip this right around. So.
Yes. All right. We're talking so much about Jen and Shireen. Will Dennison wants to talk about Jen and Shireen as well.
What's up, Rob and Angie? This is Will from Wonder Lake, and I have a theory about how the rest of the game is going to play out. I think Shireen and Jen are about to pull off what I'll call the two-person Sesternino.
Wow.
They're going to vote with Mike's half of the blue-collar alliance 1 week, then Rodney's half the next, then flip back to Mike, then back to Rodney, all the way down to a final three of Shireen, Jen, and Dan. Shireen wins in a landslide. Jen gets one vote from Haley, and Rob is the knowingest know-it-all. What do you think?
Rob's the best. Know it all. Steven should have never made that call.
Angie, is this possible? Do you think that maybe we could see a Shireen and Jen, they pair up, they go back and forth. We've talked about it both ways, but we feel like all roads to the end for Shireen lead through Jen. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So Jen says, okay, you know, here we go, Shireen. You drive, I'll be in the backseat. She literally says to Shireen,
get in the backseat and let me drive.
Or is this to Jen? Okay, she's driving. Jen's in the backseat. And then, so Will is saying they flip back and forth. We've talked about it the other way, where they stick with Mike and then pull in Sierra. But that they go to the end and Rob is the knowingest know-it-all. What do you think of that?
I think that is a beautiful story. It's a beautiful fairy tale that I would love to see play out.
Are you saying?
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
I think that's what I'm saying. I wish it were true. I wish it were true.
Well, Shireen's what's fan sake. Fiction? The side that where they go back and forth, or where they just stick with Mike?
The part where they flip back and forth. I love that strategy. I really think that would work, but I can't see them having the confidence and, I don't think there's enough faith from the other players that they would be able to do that. That seems like a masterful piece of work to do that. And I think Shireen's just trying to hang on for dear life at this point.
So you don't think that that's a numbers loophole?
Numbers loophole.
I think it is a numbers loophole, and I think she's probably smart enough to consider it. But whether or not that's actually the best route for her to take, I think it would be easier just to eliminate Rodney's side one at a time, leave Carolyn to last, pull Carolyn over to make sure that they get rid of Mike and Dan.
I think the Carolyn and Shireen thing is broken.
It is broken. Maybe keep Will around. I don't know. I don't trust anyone from that side. They're all flippers.
What about Tyler?
Flippers never win.
Yes, that's what I hear.
It's three magic words, Jeff. Flippers never win.
I think they sometimes they do.
I think they do too.
Yeah.
I didn't think Mr. Dan knows so much at the time.
Yeah.
Did you hear what he called Shireen right at the beginning of the episode?
What it wasn't Shenanane, was it?
No, it was like, well, listen to you, little Miss Know-It-All.
Yes, he did.
Dan is.
Yeah, he was like talking about like there's a difference between a blind side and a flip.
Yes.
He's like, and he's talking about Cass.
Yes. Now Cass was, Cass did it wrong. Tony did it right. And, you know, you're right, little Miss Know-It-All. You know everything. I'm like, you're so lovable, Dan. I just want to give you a squeeze.
But the problem with Dan is that he can't see this. But like his entire life in the game is about to depend on Shireen going to his side.
Yeah, I know. And isn't that, you know, not to sound too much like, not to sound too much in the Mike camp, but isn't that to Mike's credit that these people that cannot stand Dan, like Sierra and Shireen, are now voting with them because Mike's ability to pull people in and hold them close is just that good.
Yeah, Mike has been fantastic at holding this group together. I've said this a couple of times. I really thought coming into this merge, I said, okay, Mike has lost control. That he's lost Rodney. He's got Sierra hates Rodney. He's got Dan. And he's been able to take all these misfits and keep them together to this point and really, you know, keep everybody united against Joe and the no collar people. And I think a big assist for him has been that Joe has been so good in the challenges. It's been easy to keep everybody united against the threat of Joe. But now that Joe is gone, Mike's biggest challenge is about to unfold. And really, unless he can get Jen and Shireen to go and join his side, you know, he has this major Rodney problem coming up this week.
Yes, no, he does have a major Rodney problem, and he's got a Will problem too, and I don't think he realizes that Will's not with him, and you know he recognizes it as something that he's been nurturing and working on, because otherwise he wouldn't have played the fake idol on Will, because that was a really nice gesture saying, you know, I'm with you, I consider you part of my group, you're of value to me, And I think he's going to be really shocked when he realizes that Will is not actually with him.
So I'm giving Mike an A+ on this first test that he's had to pass from the merge. But I think that was sort of like the, you know, merge 101. But now here comes merge 201 now.
Yes,
and now it's a whole new semester. And this is going to be, you know, an even tougher test of what he has going on. And I think we're going to find out this week that I really feel like the person that goes home this week will be either Mike or Rodney.
I do, too.
I think it's got to be one of those two people. Or if not, it'll be like one of the top lieutenants from one of those sides. But I really feel like it's going to be this week. Push is going to come to shove. I think that this is the vote where it's like, I almost feel like it's in Survivor the Amazon where, you know, at final nine, I think this is when at final nine, did Dina go? No, that was at final eight. But basically, it's around the same point in the game where, you know, Dina and Alex were both like, okay, the vote this week is going to be Matt. Matt's the next person to go out. And both of them realize, like, I should be gunning for Alex. Like, I should be gunning for Dina. And then everybody has to pick a side in that. And I think that you're going to start to see this is the week where these two guys are going to start to come after each other.
I think lines are going to be drawn. And I think that there's going to be a lot of fighting about that because they didn't yet. That smaller side did not want that exposed yet. They are not ready. They are not at the seven. And I think that's really going to blow up in their faces. And you were asking about Tyler. I think Tyler is a very dangerous person.
Yes. Why so?
Because he's very quiet. He's very smart. He's extremely calculating. He's very, he doesn't make emotional rash decisions. And I think he would be, you'd be inviting a shark into your home if Shireen or Mike were to try and pull him over. I think Carolyn is very transparent. You know, she's kind of a hothead. I think it's actually much more safer, predictable person to have over. And you know, Will's great too, except he's completely untrustworthy, so it wouldn't matter if he's like, I'm with you 100%, you couldn't trust it.
Yeah,
so in my mind he's off the table regardless.
Okay, are you ready for another Shireen question?
I love the Shireen question. Okay. Sure.
This one comes to us from our good friend Umberto.
Hey Rob and Angie, this is Umberto calling from Miami. Really happy to have Angie doing voicemails. Represent. Rob, I do have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
On the Pinnercast, you said that you compared Shireen to Cochran the first time. However, Shireen has never flipped. Cochran flipped, and that what was known of him on the first time. So why compare them? Actually, we have Angie, who can actually see their dynamics and see how a player is supposed to play. Angie, do you think Cochran is compared to Shireen? All right, love to hear your thoughts. Bye-bye.
So how about this, Angie? Now, Umberto has a bone to pick with me.
I think you mean Umberto.
Umberto.
Yes.
Yes.
That's how he says his name. Of course, he didn't actually say his name correctly himself in his voicemail, so now I feel silly correcting you. But yes, he has a bone to pick. He always has a bone to pick.
Yes. And so he is getting on me because I said I see Shireen as a Cochran type player. Mm-hmm. And I said that her position in the game, I felt like, and I said this with Penner, was like that of Cochran in his first game. But I feel like her edit is starting to feel like Cochran in his second game. So what do you make of that? Is there any similarities that you can see between Shireen and Cochran?
Yes, I absolutely see. I see a lot of different people playing through Shireen. In fact, and Cochran is one of them. She knows the game. She understands everyone's game. I don't know if you picked up on this as well, but when she was in Tribal Council, she was articulating her own strategy, like very transparently when she was discussing whether or not she should vote for Jen or Joe, which was a very Cochran-like move, the Cochran 2.0, to say, on one hand, I could do this because this would benefit me. On the other hand, I could do that because that would benefit me. And the group, of course, wants to keep Jen because that would be in their best interest. And I thought that was, it was so... I don't know. It was almost jarring how she just laid it all out because Cochran did a very similar thing. you know, and I think that that definitely has some merit. But no, Shireen did not flip. So I don't think you necessarily meant that aspect of Cochrane. I think you just meant like the, you know, she's at the bottom. Cochrane was definitely not liked. You know, what jokes I thought were similar with Shireen, what jokes I thought were hilarious, like the facial herpes. Everyone else, like Whitney, lost her mind. Like, that's just gross. I don't want to know that. He was in the wrong place for his type of personality. And I think Shireen is definitely getting the same kind of feedback from her cast, from the castaways and from the edit. She's confessional gold, which the Chelsea Handler always is, but she is particularly very articulate and funny, just like Cochrane. So, I see it. I also see some Spencer in her as well, because she's getting that underdog edit as well, which Spencer got. You know, she's getting picked on like Sugar and a little bit like Sierra in Toka Change. Remember how, you know, that people were relentlessly like Tyson hated her guts. I couldn't figure out why. Like, why is she so annoying? What is she doing that everybody hates? But on the flip side of that, she's smart like Spencer. So she can take that and potentially get past it and use her weakness as a strength, because people aren't necessarily seeing her as a threat. And, you know, if they keep convincing each other how annoying she is, they might see her as a good goat to bring.
Okay. So you say that, you say yes. So Umberto needs to take that bone and file it in the recycle bin.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Put that bone away, Umberto. Do not pick that with me. All right. Let's take a question from Johnny D. Silvero. Wants to talk about Mike's idol / Joe's idol.
Hey, guys. Johnny D. Silvero here in Vancouver. Rob, since you defeated Cyril at the Podcast Awards, perhaps you can solve another mystery for me. Is there a third hidden immunity idol that hasn't been found yet? Did Mike find Blue Collar's original idol or Jen's that was replanted? There was no clue shown during Wednesday's reward challenge to show either way. This one really has me scratching my head. Would love to hear what you two think. Thanks.
Okay. This idol that was found, I think that there's a lot of confusion about, was this the original Escameca idol, Angie? Was this the idol that was from the Blue Collar tribe from the beginning of the game that Mike and Dan could have gotten the clue to, but instead they took the rice and the beans? Or is this a new idol that was hidden for the merch?
You know what? I myself am having such a hard time keeping track of all the idols going on around here. I got the, because there was always that one, the Blue Collars never found theirs, right?
Right.
I think they don't introduce a new one if there's still one out there. They don't ever have two hidden idols out there, do they?
I don't know.
I think it was the original blue one.
Well, go back to last season where Natalie and Baylor went to Exile Island and they found a clue to an idol, but there was already a new idol being hidden at Redemption Island. Exile Island.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I mean, what's the difference? I mean, it's after the merge. I mean, that you feel like that Joe was just getting clues to the idols that were already from, like, had Mike and Dan already gotten clues? Let's say they took the deceive box. Mm-hmm. So Joe would have gotten a clue to an idol that was already gotten a clue for. Did the description of the idol that Mike found fit what Joe had in the clue, like in the sea of green? Didn't it make it sound like it was going to be up? And the idol that Mike found was in a tree, which was like, it was similar to the location of the idol that Jen found.
Well, I mean, those clues are so vague, like sea of green. What is that going to mean? Is it going to mean like the trees, the mangroves? Like, you know, I think
it was a merge idol. I think that, oh, I'm sorry. I think that the clue that Joe had was to an idol that is not found yet, and Mike found the Blue Collar idol.
So you think there's another one out there?
I do.
That's interesting.
Now, they didn't give a clue, though, this week to the people that went, either that or they didn't find the clue on the reward challenge.
So we're down to 9 people, and you think that there are 4 idols? Like, that's a lot. I don't think that's smart on production side of things. And you know what? Comparing something to last season, I think they pretty much are trying to do the exact opposite of almost everything they did last season. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's a really good argument. Gosh, I'd like to live in a world where there's only three idols at play.
So you think that there should be no idol hidden after the merge?
Not if there's still one out there that they haven't found. Maybe they move the one they hadn't found and give a new clue to it. But no, that's too many idols.
Too many idols, too many idols.
It gets silly, right? If everyone's got an idol, it gets ridiculous.
I don't know. I feel like that there's one idol in each camp before the merge, and then there's a merge camp idol. So you could potentially have four idols in the game at the same time.
If everyone has an idol, does anyone have an idol?
It would be very exciting. I'm trying to think in Kageon how it worked. So, you know, everybody had the idol that was in the, you know, Brains Beauty Brawn camp. And then we had a lot of idols being played. LJ and Tony both played their idols in the, you know, on each other. Also, Garrett went out of the game with an idol in his pocket. So mm-hmm. then there was a new idol that was put into circulation that Spencer ultimately got the clue to. And then you had Spencer, you know, found his idol when Cass wasn't looking, as Jordan told us about on This Week in Survivor History. And then you also had then Tony found the Tyler Perry idol without the clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a clue for that? What happened at the auction? I don't even remember. I got to ask Jordan about what happened.
I feel like he did get a clue for it.
Yeah. And so you had the regular idol and the Tyler Perry idol in circulation.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's right. It's because Spencer played the idol when the young lad played it wrong. And then, Tony got the auction at the auction. He got the clue to an idol. So yeah. Tony had an idol and then found the Tyler Perry idol without the clue.
So when LJ and Tony both played the idols on each other, they replaced only one idol. They didn't replace both, right?
Right.
So there was still the same number at play. Well, the Tyler Perry idol just replaced, say, LJ's.
Right. So was it supposed to be that, I mean, in Survivor Kageon, they had a Tyler Perry idol and a regular idol both in circulation at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be two in the post-merge game.
Yes, which is a reasonable number of idols. These guys have already got three, and you're saying...
But it's the same number to me, because that they just hadn't all been played yet from the pre-merge.
So you found a numbers loophole?
I think that maybe this could be... Is this an idol loophole or a numbers loophole?
Numbers loophole.
I think it's both. It's clearly both.
It remains to be seen, because I feel like they've talked about the blue idol on the show. And
what is Mike's? It looked blue, right?
I don't know. You know, from Mike in the secret scene. And also, I wonder if it, like, we haven't talked about this at all today, but I do think that the way that Joe played the idol ended up being like 100% wrong. And part of the problem, I think, also for Joe was that Mike was in possession of a hidden immunity idol. So Mike could sort of compare the hidden immunity idol that Joe made to the one he actually had and be like, yeah, this is not the same.
That was really bad luck. But I also think it's almost impossible to play a fake idol effectively.
Really?
I don't know if you agree with that, but I think there's so much history of fake idols now that it's in everybody's head that this is a real possibility. And I think it's like a shell game kind of poker move thing. Like if someone is willing to give you an idol, it's not a real idol. Like you can assume that just the mere fact that you're handing it to me tells me this isn't real. If you wear a fake idol and other people have a real idol, they're going to be able to look at their idol and say, that's a fake. I don't think there's anything Joe could have done to get that target off his back.
I really feel like the value in the fake idol is in a person having the fake idol and the real idol. Because then, like, and Mike had that. He had Joe's fake idol and the real idol. And for Mike, like, how great would it have been, you know, to then, you know, take the wrappings of the real idol and then put the fake idol in that. And then, you know, how you have to wrap it up with the parchment and the string and everything. And then now this is a real package that you could hand off to somebody of the fake idol. Don't you think that is almost really great? And then, you know, like Mike gave his idol away. Let's vote for him now. And then he has the real idol also.
If you are in a power position and you actually have the real idols, yes, fake idols can be very, very useful. If you're on the bottom and you're being targeted and the power players own real idols and you've got this, you know, legitimately well-constructed fake idol, but it's still obviously a fake idol, I don't think there's much you can do with that. I think Mike definitely could have used it to his advantage, but Joe, I think, was backed into a corner. I don't think there was any way he could have played that and it would have worked for him.
Yeah. You know, Bob Crowley says in Survivor Gabon, where he's trying to get something going with a second fake idol that he makes. He says, you know, we don't have to actually have a gun. You know, we just have to walk into the bank and like let them think we have a gun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do think that there is something to that. There's some value, I think, in the fake idol. I don't think that Joe ultimately played it the right way. I think he probably needs to walk into tribal council wearing it. I think that's probably the maximum effectiveness of what he's doing. I think he has to at least give people pause for thinking to vote for him, even though they're going to try to flush his fake idol. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, even if you were able to figure out who didn't have an idol and kind of secretly show it to them, like, here it is, I'm ready to play it tonight.
Yeah.
Then they're just going to split the vote and force him to play
right.
it. So there isn't really a way out.
The biggest problem for Joe is that then they could just vote out Jen. If Joe had made it to final seven or final eight, and that group of seven is saying, well, hold on, if his idol is real, one of us is going home. That's the problem, where it's like okay, well, let's see what happens. If his idol is fake, then he goes home. If not, then Jen goes home. They mm-hmm. His biggest problem there was that, you know, Jen was still in the game. And I also feel like, just to make one other dark analogy about immunity idols and Survivor and, you know, and guns, not that I'm a big gun guy, but I do feel like what Jen was doing was, you know, to use the term, you know, death by cop, where it's like, you know, I don't want to kill myself, but I'm going to like run out into like a crowded, a crowded place with a gun. And then, you know, that I want to, you know, I'm hoping to get shot. And then it's like, I don't have to take my own life, but yeah. I end up and going out of the game.
They're
going to
say, put it down. And I'm not going to put it down. And then the inevitable is going to happen.
Right. Right. I think that's ultimately what Jen is trying to do. Again, I don't like to go to, you know, make these dark analogies, but that's what I thought it was like with Jen.
I think that's a very fair analogy.
You know, she doesn't want to commit suicide. I'm not going to quit.
No, but she's not a quitter.
Yeah.
Not
but if you guys then take me out, then because of what I did, then, you know, then I go out and I didn't quit. All right. So let's take another question here, and let's do this one from Tess, who has a question about something that was odd in the episode too, that I left myself wondering as well. Here is this question from Tess.
Hey, Rob. It's Tess from Vancouver. When the teams for challenges are divided by schoolyard picks, am I the only one who is interested in witnessing the picking? I mean, schoolyard picks really aren't done much in school these days because they usually end up with hurt feelings. I'm wondering, well, who are the team captains? Who was picked first and who was picked last? Or are we just supposed to assume that maybe it isn't good TV and that Will was picked last and he was totally okay with it? Wondering what you think. Love the podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, why'd they leave that in there about the schoolyard pick and then ultimately they didn't show us anything about schoolyard pick?
I am personally interested in seeing it. I would like to see, like, I don't know how much it really shows in terms of, you know, it's not like the coconut chop challenge or anything in that you see who's in your alliance, but you definitely get a sense of which players are valued for their, you know, competition abilities over other players. I did get a sense that, I got the sense that Joe was one of the captains, just the way he like rubbed everybody's head after it was done or just mm-hmm. before it started. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think that there is so much to be gained out of the schoolyard pick. I mean, in recording the evolution of strategy, I mean, Josh Wiggler and I have just gotten through Samoa, and there's a point where they do a schoolyard pick at six, and Natalie White and Russell are the two captains, and Natalie White takes Brett, and that is, you know, annoys Russell and Jason that she's like, well, like, oh, why is she picking him? And so I do think that there's something to it, but I wonder if the way to do schoolyard pick, and I'm not sure if I saw this somewhere else this week, but I almost feel like you shouldn't pick schoolyard pick based on who's the best to win your challenges, but who are the people you want to spend the next 24 hours with in terms of strategy? Almost like what Joe did when he picked the people for the reward, where Who are the people that you need to be spending? Like, I think you should pick schoolyard pick almost like you're picking the people for the reward if you were the winner. And I don't know if one person picked it or if, well, you pick one person, then you pick the next person after. But I would always pick the person, I think, who I would want to spend the day with. Who is the swing vote that I need to keep on my side?
I think that's a smart way to do it. I don't know if they're actually thinking that strategically about it. I think
of course not.
They're thinking like they're mesmerized by chocolate. So that's all that they're thinking about. And also, I think it is so difficult to control because you are going to be going back and forth. So, you know, let's say you're Tyler and, oh, I really want to hang out with Carolyn. You know, the next person that you're going to end up with is Rodney when you know, you least expect it. Because
right.
That's just how the cards fall.
But I would add the caveat, like, you can't go out there and be like, all right, Rob, who's your first pick in schoolyard pick? You're the captain. I'm going to take Shireen. I think that's like too obvious, but if you can like do the Venn diagram of who do you want to spend time with and also who would be good to help your team win, because then you end up in a situation like in Survivor Gabon where it's like, I'm going to pick Susie to be on my team. And then everybody's like, oh, and then you totally like foobar the teams. So who do we want to spend time with, but also who's going to be good in the challenges? If you can like come up with in the Venn diagram of who it's going to be, like, all right, I'm going to go, I got to go with Tyler. Like, okay, well, that's an interesting pick. You could pick Mike or Rodney or, you know, somebody, and you pick the person who you think is also going to be good to talk to also.
Well, is there any evidence that isn't what happened?
We have no evidence of what happened.
I know. I'm just looking at the split. So let's assume that Mike was one captain and Joe was the other, because it's a sexist show and they probably chose the two, you know, male champions to do this. So, because I'm looking at who's in Mike's group here, and we've got Dan, Shireen, Tyler, and Sierra, which is pretty much his alliance, right? And how it's going to shake out. And Tyler's a bit of a swing vote there, and that's pretty much it. So the people back at camp that are like making fun of Mike are the ones that are planning this flip on him. And I don't know if that's a coincidence or not.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think it was, because you have the entire Rodney 4 minus Tyler is all back at camp.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And maybe that's because Mike was saying, you know, I don't feel like I'm really close enough to Tyler. I need to get in with him. So who knows?
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and take another question. And this is from, speaking of this group that stayed back, I want to play this question from Albert in Tustin.
Hey, Rob and Angie. This is Albert calling from Tustin, California. And I have a question about the reward challenge. We saw the losing tribe go out and kill one of the chickens and eat it while the winners were out eating Wouldn't that have caused a major problem when the winning tribe came home for them to see that one of the chickens was gone? And also, if you had a choice, would you have chosen to lose the task so that way you can go ahead and eat some protein? Or would you totally take the sweets? I want to know. Bye.
Okay. This was something that I thought was also interesting. So it looked like from the group that went on the reward, they were off eating the candy, and the group that stayed back made the executive call, looked like it was Rodney's call, to eat the chicken while everybody else was gone. But there was no blowback when the candy people came home.
I was extremely shocked by that.
Yes.
I would think that eating the chicken while the others were away is a huge no-no. I think it was in Cagayan that they mentioned that they always eat extra rice when the rest of the tribe's on reward. And I think that's okay. But to eat a whole chicken, isn't that kind of like drinking all the wine and then passing out in the outhouse?
Yeah. I wonder if the candy group was in on it. And I wonder if that was a thing. I wonder if it was a mic call. And I know that this is probably total fan fiction on my part.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
But I wonder if it was the kind of thing where Mike said, like, and again, my voice is where I'm not going to do it has been told many times that my mic pales in comparison to Rodney's mic, which is like this.
We're all out here doing the same damn thing with the same damn people, but you wonder who the people gonna be.
All right, so
we do need to talk about Rodney's impression at some point.
All right, but you know, I wonder if Mike said like, hey, like whatever, whoever wins, you know, one group, one side eats the candy, the other side, you guys kill a chicken.
He's like the Don of that. He's like the Godfather. Kill a chicken.
Wouldn't that be a very diplomatic thing to do? Wonder if maybe did both sides say, you know, like, let's say go back to your theory of if Mike and Joe are the captains, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, whoever wins, they go on reward. Whoever loses, you guys, let's kill a chicken today.
I think that's probably very likely what happened, whether or not it was Mike's idea.
Because nobody was mad. You would think that they would show us somebody being mad.
Oh, well, they don't show everything. So maybe they just weren't like furious.
When have you ever seen on Survivor that a chicken without group consent gets eaten and somebody wasn't furious?
No, you're right. It was likely decided at some point.
We saw last week that there was tension over cutting salami.
Well, that's a different thing.
That there was in somebody's mind, it looked like there was a salami loophole.
Numbers loophole.
Salami loophole.
No, I think you're probably right. I'm just trying to think of the people who went, like, where were the hotheads? Who were the people that would have freaked out? It would have been someone like Dan.
Dan.
So he must have been in on it. Otherwise, he would have come back and been like, I am a fat guy. I need those chickens.
Yeah, he would have come back and been like,
well, you know, Jeff, it comes back to a story of me and my friends and mate.
I
gotta ask you about those impressions, because you are a pretty competitive guy. Were you able to take joy from his Mike impression, or were you having like a Newman moment?
I'm happy. Why else so happy? But no,
this is the one, you are the king of impressions. This is the one that has eluded you, that you've been struggling with the most.
What, so Dan impression?
The Mike impression. So did you struggle with it?
I cannot go full, unlike Colby, I cannot go full tilt because it is such a struggle for me to keep my voice, you know, at the level where I can podcast, you know, five or 6 hours a day. It's not worth it for me. So
it's very raspy. I can imagine.
Yes,
that would really hurt.
I would kill my voice to try to go all in on a Mike impression and go full tilt where Rodney is around the guy. So I totally concede the Mike impression crown to Rodney.
Okay, that's awesome. It made me, like, from a personal point of view, it made me realize that I'm an exceptionally shallow individual, because I'm not going to lie, Rodney was not my favorite player. I found him obnoxious, vacuous, vulgar, what have you. Then he launches into this Mike impression. He kills it. My first thought is, I think I've completely misjudged Rodney. Like, what does that say about the depth of my feelings?
Yeah. But to me, I was more impressed with Dan because...
let's not bury the lead, right?
Like, I was more impressed with the Dan impression because, you know, I think that, you know, everybody can at least attempt a Mike impression. But for Rodney to go from, you know, full Boston accent of... you know, I want a patty, you know, Sunday fun day, I'm Tom Brady, you know, to go from that to then to take it all away and then to go into the Dan.
Well, you know, Jeff, it comes back to a story of me and my friends and me.
I was more impressed with his Dan.
I know. It's just like it was like the Mike impression was just the opening act. And then he closes the house with the maid impression.
I wonder who else can he do?
I think he can probably do everybody.
Because
he was saying his secret scene, like he has seven buddies and he has an impression of every single one of them. And that's all he does all day is impressions.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, it's going to it's like an honorary membership into the Rap Hall of Fame, I think.
Yeah. So great. We love it. All right, Angie, I've got one last question for you. Okay, and this comes to us from Tyler, not that Tyler, okay?
Hey, Rob. Tyler from Michigan here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I was wondering, with Dan having another stellar episode last night and letting Joe get away to make his fake immunity idol, is it time that we start referring to him as the Dan that sucks? Or is there another Dan that holds that title, like Dan Limbo or Dan Liu? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Okay. All right, here we go. Let's talk about this. Who is the survivor Dan that sucks. Okay. Well, I think we have to establish then who's the survivor Dan that doesn't suck also.
I think that's the problem. I think you need to have someone that's done exceptionally well to contrast the whoever who sucks. Right.
Okay.
And I don't think there have been any standout Dan.
Well, there have been 5 survivor Dans to this point.
Really?
And this does not include, Danielle DiLorenzo, Double D, or Danny Boatwright. Although we could potentially one day get a survivor, Dan's versus Kelly's going on. Yeah. Or Rob's versus John's versus Dan's. But okay, to this point, we have 5 survivor Dans, and I think it's time to do the survivor Dan power rankings. Whoa. All right. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? All right. So let me introduce you to, in case for those of you guys with short memories, let's introduce you to the 5 survivor Dans. Okay. So let's start with, of course, that we need a man who needs no introduction. We have Dan Foley. Okay. And of course we know Dan Foley.
I just suck.
All right, this is Dan Foley. And of course, this week he had one job, to watch Joe, and then he lost him. That's Dan Foley.
That's Dan Foley.
Yes. And Dan Foley is from Maine. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Okay. So we have Dan Foley. Okay. Then previous to Dan Foley, we have from Survivor Nicaragua, the great Dan Lembo.
And all of his twits.
And does he have to be here? Okay, so that's Dan Lembo. All right. And then previous to Dan Lembo, a lot of people may not remember the Dan from Survivor Gabon, Dan K.
Survivor Gabon, yes. Dan K.
The aspiring lawyer who ate goodness. Too much food. And started out on Fong, and then went over to be with Corinne and Randy.
Wow! Yeah, no, very little memory of that guy, Dan
K. He was hoping to find himself on Survivor Gabon.
I'm just looking him up on my spreadsheet. Yes. He was the seduce and destroy.
Yes, Corinne said he might have been a former fatty.
That sounds very unlike Corinne.
Yes. Okay. That's Dan K. Okay. Then, of course, we have the great astronaut Dan Fuego. Oh, yeah. Yes, Dan Barry from La Mina.
Wow.
Friend of Terry, FOT.
Yeah.
He was a former FOTY.
Dan Barry. No, I do remember him.
And of course, astronaut. We have a great friend of mine. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we have from Survivor the Amazon, Dan Liu.
Woo, Dan Liu.
All right, so we have 5 Survivor Dan. All right, Angie, it's time for, I wish we had a jingle for this, but it's time for the Survivor Dan power rankings.
Woo, all right.
All right, who is number one here?
So what order are we going in? The best to worst best?
All right, so let's go from worst to best. Who is the worst survivor, Dan? Again, we have, and if the book isn't written yet on Dan Foley.
No, it isn't. And I've got to consider the fact that he's made it to Final 9. Like, that's got to mean something as well.
Yes.
And he's got a pretty solid alliance. Like, Mike doesn't seem to find him annoying.
Right.
So that's got to count for something.
It's got to count for something.
Just close your mouth, open your ears, and just watch what happens.
Yeah. And we're talking about potentially that Dan Foley could go to the final 3. That is not outside of the realm of possibility. And that would be the highest placement of any of the Survivor Dans.
No, that's true. That's true. I'm not, I'm not hating Dan Foley on this particular Dan power.
Wow.
The pickings are right. Slim.
So who is the worst survivor, Dan?
Well, tell me more about Dan from Amazon.
Dan from Amazon. Now, again, he is the first of his name. Dan, Dan from Survivor Amazon, Dan Liu.
There's a lot of pressure when you're the first of your name.
He is also, I think, perhaps maybe the most iconic of the survivor Dans.
How's
that? I think that he's very unforgettable. I mean, I feel like that he is still you know, so many years later, I mean, this is now 12 years after the airing of his boot episode. We're still talking about Dan Liu. I think many Survivor fans know Dan Liu. I don't think that Dan Liu can be the Dan that sucks.
No, I'm leaning towards Gabon.
Yes, I think forgettable. The only known for being a former fatty to Corinne. Josh Wigler and I talked a lot about Dan Barry. I'm sorry, Dan K. In again, I'm even getting his name wrong now. In when we do Survivor Gabon, I think Dan K. might be the Survivor that sucks. The Survivor Dan that sucks.
The Dan that sucks, right?
Yes. Okay. Then, all right. Who's number four?
Well, I'm trying to weigh the merits.
I think it might be Dan Lembo. Is number four.
I'm thinking that as well, because he was he seemed to someone that was you know, dragged through the game.
Hold on. Do I have to be on this list? Is this mandatory?
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, he brought the alligator shoes. That was kind of like Julie McGee bringing her Gucci bag to the island.
Yes. It's just,
I don't think he knew where he was.
Dan Lembo, I think, is four. And then yeah. I think it's boy.
All right, Dan Barry.
Astronaut Dan is number Dan Fuego.
I think he was a hell of a guy, but he didn't bring a lot of game.
Did you know he was an astronaut? Did you hear that he was an astronaut?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people didn't know that.
He told Terry.
I know that. When we get to that chapter in Evolution of the Strategy, you'll hear that that it irritates me that he drops that astronaut bomb on people left and right. It's a little bit.
He says, "I'm going to keep it a secret," and then he's like, "I got
to." And then he tells everybody, and he really wants people to be impressed with that he's an astronaut. Well, he really wants people to be blown away with that.
He's been in space.
He's been in space. Yes. Who knew? Yeah. All right. There's Dan Fuego. I have a lot of, there's no love for me with the Lamina tribe minus Terry. I think one of the most boring groups of survivors ever assembled. Lamina minus Terry.
Yeah.
When Terry goes to Exile Island, boy. That you could just get the remote out for anything with the Lamina group minus Terry. All right.
The knee socks don't do it for you.
No. And she hardly wears them. She wears them in like one episode.
Really? That's all I remember about her.
Yeah. Dawn Ross says something. The minister of Sally propaganda. I don't know that she's not that great. All right. Then. All right. So number two, who is the Dan that doesn't suck? Is it Dan Foley or Dan Liu?
How did we get Dan Foley all the way up?
Because he's going to do the best of any Survivor Dan. And I think that the previous record for Dans on Survivor, first off, of these five Dans, none of them. I'm not, does Dan K make the, I think Dan K is the last person that doesn't make, I don't think he makes the jury. He makes the merge, but not the jury. Is that right?
I think
he's even pre-merge. I think that he's, because they have a late merge in Gabon.
Yeah, no, I think he goes out at 11. So I don't think that if there is a late merge, then I don't think.
Yeah, he gets voted off day 21, which is typically the merge, but he also is undateable. So all the Survivor Dans are undateable except for Dan Foley and Dan Lembo. Dan Lembo is the previous Survivor Dan to go the furthest. He comes in fifth. Is Dan Foley have a good shot here? He's at final nine. Can he survive four more votes?
I think he can. I'm finding this whole process to be very shocking.
Is Dan not the Dan that sucks, apparently, which flies in the face of what he says about himself.
I just suck.
He might just be the Dan that doesn't suck.
He might be. I mean, I'm not the Amazon expert, so you got to make this final call. But yeah, I mean, it's a very small pool.
Yeah.
You know, it's five players.
I think that Dan might just be the best Survivor Dan of all time, with Dan Liu being number two. I think that the Dan power rankings go Dan K at number five, Dan Lembo at number four, Dan Fuego at number three. Dan Liu is number two, and Dan Foley is the Dan that doesn't suck.
I just suck.
No.
Dan is wrong.
Yes. You don't. Dan, you don't suck.
So you, how that I suck. Turned out
no.
No. Dan is wrong again.
Yeah.
You need to calm down. You need to calm down with the voice clips. I think that's a perfect example of how, you know, you start into something thinking it's going to end one way, and then you get to the end and you're like, wow, that really, I was not expecting
that.
Yes,
I'm being asked on Periscope, what about Danny GC Brown? I'd say that I would slot GC in at number 6, below even Dan K, because he's not even going by Dan.
Is GC a Dan?
I guess so. That he's such a bad Dan that he decides to go by GC Golden Child instead of Dan. That's how bad of a Dan he is.
Yeah, well, he went out before Dan K. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
So that doesn't even, yeah.
He would be worse. He would be worse than Dan K even.
Yeah, and he was like practically a quitter too. He's like, I don't want to be in charge. Who put me in charge?
Yeah, he sort of was. Okay. All right. So those are the Survivor voicemails for the week. All right?
All right.
Yes. All right, Angie, let me just talk about a couple of news items from this week before we get to social media. Of course, we talked about at the top of the show last week, but Survivor is doing fantastic in the ratings this season.
Yes.
Yes. And it looks as though American Idol, which was once the juggernaut, which was once the show that was just, you know, beating the pants off everything with, you know, 30 million viewers a week, is really having a hard time to even hold its own against Survivor. Survivor ratings on Wednesday night had a 2.2 rating, had 9.35 million viewers compared to a 1.4 rating, a 7.63 million viewers for American Idol. And this was a big deal. Even as recently as a year ago, I remember the first time Survivor beat American Idol in the ratings, CBS sent out a press release. It's like, for the first time ever, Survivor has beaten American Idol. And now it's not even close.
Yeah, no, American Idol's like the Titanic. It's not so tough.
Really? It's split into two? Was that when they started doing the X Factor? And then
And then it just starts to sink.
Yes, it's just bobbing there now. It's going down, American Idol.
Yeah, no, I've never been an American Idol fan, so I don't know why anyone would watch that show, but no, that's really great news. I want Survivor to keep going and going and going. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And according to Reality Blurred, Survivor was the number 8 show for the week, which is really like,
wow.
Really incredible.
That is really incredible. And considering, I mean, like last season, it wasn't getting ratings like that. So
I mean, it's been like a resurgence. I mean, I haven't tracked this super closely, but I feel like Survivor, it used to be like in the, you know, in the top 10. And then, you know, the top 1 for a long time. And then it was sort of, I feel like it was like in the top 20-ish like shows, and other things were doing worse. But I feel like that the rest of TV has eroded at a rate faster than Survivor.
I would say so. It does seem to be able to keep boomeranging back. It ebbs and flows, much like the game itself. It has its good years and its bad years and its periods where it loses people. And then it seems to gain momentum again.
Yes, gaining momentum, indeed. And also, I have another news item about, there was so much talk about Dan this past week. And of course, in Maine, this is big news that Dan is on Survivor, right?
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that's huge.
Yes, but there was an article that was written in the Portland Press Herald of Maine contestant finds Survivor dreams comes with nightmares. Subtitle, Dan Foley is criticized for being hard on other cast members, but he says he's being unfairly portrayed. Acquaintances say he's a kind guy and a great friend. There's a picture of Dan with his wife, mm-hmm. but it's an article about how the editing has been unfair to Dan.
I read that article.
Yes.
That screamed, I've hired a PR firm to me.
So do you think Dan has a PR firm? He didn't hire Rob as a PR firm.
No, he did not.
I was very surprised that I was quoted in the Dan article. Now, the Portland Press Herald did not reach out to me directly for comment, but in the article, they said, and I was on the side of I'm pro Dan. How about that? Well, I just named him the Dan that doesn't suck, so I guess I must
be. True, but the quote was really scathing.
In the article, they say Dan has also been celebrated by some Survivor fans. for helping to add some of the melodrama. That's one of this show's hallmarks. Rob Cesternino, co-host of a web series called Survivor Know-It-Alls, said after the April 8th episode that he was glad that Foley did not get voted off because he's been so fantastically terrible. As a viewer, I was not ready to let go of Dan. He's given us a lot of gold this season, Cesternino said on his web series. Yes.
So if you ever decide to celebrate me, Rob, can you choose your words a little bit less scathing?
All right. Well, one, it's terrible. I love it that I'm not even I'm just I'm quoted as a Survivor fan.
Yeah.
Which is not untrue. Which is not untrue. Yes. So
the knowing is know it all.
Yes, I mean they didn't
celebrate Stan Foley.
They didn't co-host. They didn't co-host the other Survivor fan that I do the show with. So I guess I have one up on Steven.
Well, there you go.
Yes. And so
were you pleased to see your name in lights?
And, I made it.
And in the Portland Herald.
Thank you, Portland Press Herald. Yes. I wonder if I will be quoted next week as Survivor fan. Rob Cesternino, co-host of a show called Rob Has a Podcast, said that Dan Foley is the Dan that doesn't suck.
Well, here's my question about this. Do you think that they quoted you because you are the biggest name in Survivor
fandom? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I am the biggest Survivor fan out there.
Or do you think that they were just searching for somebody somewhere who said something positive about Dan?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I don't know how exactly the Portland Press Herald it came about it, but you know, I still think that Dan has been good TV. I think that it has been, you know, I don't mind. I said last week on the podcast that I'm a rubbernecker, and if somebody is going to be, you know, saying the sort of things that he has said on the show, you know, I'm interested to see how it's going to play out. I don't think that person can win this game, but I'm interested to see how it goes. I know that a lot of people feel like, what he said was so bad. He shouldn't, that, you know, there is inexcusable. I do think that there's a little bit to the heat of the moment. I don't think that you should say what he's been saying out there, but I don't think it's I think we've heard worse on Survivor.
Oh, we've definitely heard worse, but like being worse than terrible or being slightly better than just...
I believe, you know, if you're going to quote me, I believe I said fantastically terrible.
No, I'm just saying that if someone, you know, because we have heard some pretty horrendous things said on Survivor. So do you really want it to be like, well, it wasn't quite as bad as that? You know, I would rather, I would think that the bar should be set a little bit higher than that. And I admit that I do get, I do find it a little uncomfortable, some of the
stuff
that Dan has said. But sure. I get that we like good TV. We like being able to talk about what's going on. Some of the best played seasons were the most boring to talk about. So,
yeah, it's a huge article. It's a massive article. I don't know how many words it is.
It's very glowing about Dan. And that's why I thought, you know, when you've got that photo of his wife and they're just in like marital bliss, just eyes closed. I couldn't imagine a more dreamy thing than this relationship I have with this perfect man. And that's why I'm like, whoa, he's getting some spin on here. Or perhaps, you know, if this newspaper reached out to him because they thought, oh, this guy might be making Maine look bad. I don't want people to think that everybody in Maine is like this.
I think they write an article about him every week, I think, because there was one for, I think they do an update. But of course, I mean, like, you could say you were edited fairly or unfairly, but I just go back to, you know, like when I had the debate with my own wife over where she claimed that I edited her unfairly in the video about our day, where she said, well, you only put in the parts where I was mean to you. I was like, no, I put in the parts where that actually happened. Like, I feel like you can be unfairly edited on Survivor, where if they take something out of context and like overlay like something that didn't happen with like somebody, like, you know, they sort of like can make where other people said something about you where it's like, oh my God, like, you know, Angie is, she always gives people like this stink eye and then cut to you like looking at something. That's where something is edited unfairly, where, you know, you take something that didn't exactly happen and use footage from something else and sort of cobble something together. That's unfair editing. But like, there's no way that Dan could argue what he said was out of context.
No,
you know,
it was fully in context.
And we saw the actual conversation that he had. Now, again, would it have been more fair to not put that in the show? I don't think that was necessarily, that would be true. But I don't think Dan walks around Gora, Maine, like yelling at women and saying, "But God, please slap this woman over here." You know,
but also in fairness, how many people like Shireen are walking around in Gora, Maine?
I don't know. I don't know what goes on in Gora, Maine. I mean, it's where Julie Berry is from. So I'm sure they have incredibly wonderful people there.
I'm sure they do. But I think that they all look like, you know, people who don't look like Shireen.
Well, I don't know what goes on in Maine. I really don't know exactly what goes on there. But that being said, like, I'm sure that like all people, Dan is an incredibly nuanced person. And I'm sure he's not angry all the time. But I'm sure there are times when he does get angry.
In your analogy, like, I would have to put the stank eye out there in order for them to capture it on film and then be able to put that in my unfair edit.
Yeah, but you could have been looking at something else or whatever. Like, and that definitely does happen on reality TV where somebody is, you know, the events are portrayed in a different order or something like that. That's what I would constitute as unfair editing, which certainly does happen and may or may not have happened on Survivor to people over the years. But, you know, to say that the quotes that were used by, you know, I don't think you can be misquoted by yourself. You know, no. In your own confessionals, you can't be misquoted.
Yes, that was a monologue. It wasn't like, you know, I know Rocker said that he was the victim of unfair editing last season because they just took that snippet of his one reaction to Natalie yelling at him. And they didn't see everything that led up to that. And that was unfair editing. This was a full on, this is my full confessional from beginning to end. And this is what I'm saying about this other person.
Unless the conversation that we didn't see was right before what Dan said, Shireen was like, "You know what, Dan, you're an idiot. You're like, you're a moron. You thought you're like," and for whatever reason, Survivor chose, and I guess we'll have no way to ever know if Shireen did say that in front of them. We'll never, ever be able to find out if that was the case or not, which I don't believe it was, but I guess we'll never know. I mean, that's the only way that could have been unfairly edited where, you know, Shireen did something so inflammatory to Dan that Survivor had just decided not to show us that information.
Yeah, but then he walked away. He found his little place by the tree. He sat down, he composed himself, and then he had this complete monologue. So even if she had done something infuriating,
why Survivor would ever hide something like that from us, you know, would remain a mystery as well.
Maybe it will just be a mystery.
We'll have no way of ever knowing.
I mean, I do think it's like in the, because I need to make a Walking Dead analogy. It's like in the Walking Dead when they say, you know, the longer they're out there, the more they become who they are. I think that's what happens out there. It strips away at you, and you can't hide what's at your core, and you really become the barest version of yourself. And I think Dan is putting a lot of that personality out there. I think in the beginning he was fun guy when he still had some blood.
Hey, he was fun when he sucked that M&M right into his mouth. That was fun, right?
Yeah, no, I guess. But I think, I think he's a hard hitting, judgmental, critical guy. And I think sometimes it works if you just accept him on that level, because he's probably also a very warm and generous person. I don't think that the article was lying. Let's put it that way.
I'm sure. Yeah, I have no doubt that Dan is a great guy to hang out with at times also, that he also has a different side of his personality.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, well, I talked to Lindsay when we did the exit interview, and Lindsay said, you know, Dan gets on my nerves and he's trying to do stuff for the camera. And again, maybe with the Shireen thing, he just thought he was being funny to saying that. And it was a major miscalculation on what people consider to be funny.
Funny, yes.
Yeah. And was he trying to, because, you know, he does try to be a showman. Yeah, he juggles and he does like little like parlor tricks and stuff like that. And
he should take up impressions.
He should do impressions. Those hit. Yeah, those resonate, baby.
Yeah. Like a house on fire.
A house on fire. All right. Some Survivor birthdays this week. Artists who Penner said only got on the show because he had the worst application ever.
Of all time. I had no idea. That is so funny.
That he is 55. Jeff Varner is 49 years young. That boy.
Oh, there you go.
Jeff Varner. His birthday is was this past week. Then we have Christina Coria. She had a birthday. Joel Klug, at his birthday, Whoa. The original Survivor chauvinist.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That he turned 43, and the great Eddie Fox turns but 26. Well, just a young pup.
Yeah, a young babe. Yes. Eddie Fox.
All right, it's time for the week in Survivor tweets.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than watching Rodney go off and punch a tree. Tweets.
Yes. Survivor Woo! Tweets, Angie.
I love this part.
Okay. Are you ready to start off with the great Eliza Orleans?
Always.
Okay. Eliza was ready to go on Wednesday night because she saw the commercials. She tweeted, "Let's hope we do not have a quitter on our hands tonight."
That's right. She hates the quitters.
She does hate the quitters. Okay.
I hate the quitters too. I got to tell you, I really do not like the quitters. I'm 100% in Team Eliza when it comes to
150,000%.
That's right. Yes. That's right. I want to publicly shame all quitters.
Eliza said, "If I came back from a reward and the others had killed a chicken and eaten it without us, I would have been pissed." Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Eliza also said, "I should have been like, hey, at Jeff Probst, can you verify that this is an effing stick and not an idol?"
Oh my God, that would have been so funny. Yeah, I find it hard to believe that even for a nanosecond that anyone thought the effing stick was an idol.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably like my second favorite Survivor moment of all time.
Yeah, it's a good moment.
Yeah.
Then Eliza said, "Hey, at Ozzy Luce, the fake idol at JAnglem21 just made put your effing stick to shame." Okay, she's trolling Ozzy about the fake idol.
She is trolling Ozzy. What's she trying to get? What's she trying to do there?
Piss him off. She set up an Ozzy versus Joe Anglem season,
or an Ozzy versus Eliza season.
Yeah. By the way, did you see what Jeff Probst tweeted about Joe Anglem?
"I love you. I love you, Joe. I need you back on the show because I love you."
Yeah, that Jeff Probst tweeted, "Holy smokes, a lot of love for at JAnglem21. We got to find a way to get him back. I hear you. Note taken." Interesting. Also, yeah, that just
very subtle. Yeah.
Interesting to note, Jeff at replies JAnglem21 for a guy that it wanted a Twitter ban. Not but 6 months ago that he's from directing people to Jay Anglem's Twitter.
I think he's a changed man. Yes. I think he realized that
he's embracing the social media.
Well, you know, because he had that what I thought was very arrogant stance of, "If you want to tweet survivors, tweet at me." And, you know, Jeff is not a very engaging person on social media. He's one of these people that likes to stand in front of a podium and just talk. And I don't think he realized the impact it would have to just shut it down dead like that.
Yeah. I think he used to be more into it. I think that now he's just sort of like pops in and out.
Yeah. So like, I don't even know why he put that out there as something that was even a viable option for anyone to do, because it was pointless.
Yeah. Also, my mom still is upset about Joe. My mom is right there with Joe. If my mom had a Twitter, she would have been like, "Oh man, I can't believe that." I asked my mom about it. She was a huge Joe fan this season. She said she hopes now that everybody loses. I think she said she's rooting for Shireen now just because she wants everybody who got rid of Joe to pay for what they did.
I want them to pay.
She's out on Rodney, and I think she's out on Mike. She's out on anybody that had a hand in Joe going home this week.
You know what I was thinking about this morning? I was thinking about what Joe did wrong, because he wasn't like he didn't do a lot of master strategizing. He wasn't very good at like pulling the trigger on deals and stuff. Do you know what I think it is?
What's that?
I think he is such an exceptional specimen of human being. I think he's just used to showing up and things just going his way.
This is like the attractive woman who doesn't have a great personality because everybody just laughs at everything she says because she's so hot.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he does have a great personality. Like, I think he's very, he's so down to earth and he's really easy just to spend time with. But I honestly think part of him was thinking, if I just bring the right people to the reward challenge and I just sit there and be myself, I'm going to win them over, because every other time I've done that in my life, people just fall at my feet.
Everybody likes me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but my mom is not happy.
He won her over.
She's just pissed. Yes. She said that he was, that she will, she liked him because she said that she felt like that he was Malcolm plus Spencer into one.
He didn't have the same snark, you know, like he's like the super nice version of Malcolm and Spencer. Like Malcolm and Spencer both had an edge.
Yes.
You know, and Joe just doesn't. So I don't know if that works to his benefit or not. I think not.
All right. Well, she wants to, she wants her vengeance. Everybody must pay. All right. So Corinne tweeted. So Corinne said that chocolate crap for a reward is A, blatant advertising. B, gotta be all melted by the end of this challenge. Yeah, I hope they kept it on ice.
Yeah, I was thinking that was going to be really gross. Yeah. And, you know, did you watch all the secret scenes?
I watched a few of them. I didn't get into too many of the product placement ones. I watched.
They were all, like, half of them were chocolate. I'm like, enough. I just skipped over those. It was painful. Painful product placement.
We'll have no way to ever know if they were iced up or they were melted chocolate. That will also be always a mystery to us.
I think that
we have no way of knowing.
It would be all over their hands and faces if it was melted. Wouldn't it have just been like Homer Simpson eats chocolate?
Yes. Well, you could tell it was product placement because we also did not get any confessional of anybody talking about it. Their bad experiences with the candy.
No, it was like nirvana of chocolate bar craziness. It was all like it was the best moment of my life.
Yes. Yes. All right. Corinne also said, I cannot deal with the Will slide. It's the greatest thing ever. And I need that GIF made and tweeted to me stat. Did you like the Will slide?
I freaking loved it. That whole, when, as soon as the Dodo music came on, I thought this is going to be so good. And watching both of them, it was both of them. And watching Probes try not to crack up.
Yeah.
It was epically good. Like, I thought like the butt plant on the slide was good. And then the way Will just went down like shoulder first.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was good.
When I was watching it this morning and waiting for the babysitter to come so I could record this podcast, and I had Dominic by me, and I was like watching that, and I try to like if there's something like interesting happen, like action happening on the screen, I try to point him to it. And there was a couple times that he was watching it, and after a couple of the falls, like, oh no.
It was like watching walruses on the Nature Channel. That's what it was like. Like, if walruses were trying to get through this obstacle course, it would look like that.
Yes. Also, Corinne said about Mike. Mike only ever wanted Snickers, not like a nice filet. Mike's a 5-year-old trapped in an adult body, and I love that about him.
Oh,
sucking kneecaps, Corinne.
She does like him.
She does. And also, Corinne said, it's not a popular thing to say, but I can promise you, at Charlie Herschel and I would have cut ourselves off after one, maybe two bars. I'm not sure if we could say the same about Dan K. Dan K might have relapsed with all that candy.
Yeah, I got to think that's not great reward food, too.
Yes. All right. So, are you ready to talk about, how about some Rupert tweets, Angie?
Ooh, here we go. Rupert tweets.
Tweets, baby tweets, Rupert tweets. They're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Rupert tweets. Okay. Are you ready for Rupert's tweets? Okay. All right. So, Angie, we are on quite a hot streak. I believe 3 weeks in a row, my guests have been able to correctly identify the Rupert tweet. Okay.
That makes me very nervous. I'm very nervous right now.
Okay. All right. So here we go. So I'm going to give you 4 tweets from Rupert, and 3 of them are going to be real, and 1 of them is going to be fake. Okay. Here's tweet number 1. With all this candy on the reward, where's my favorite candy bar? A Mr. Good Bar. Hashtag Survivor.
Okay.
That's number 1. Number 2. How to start a fight on Survivor. Kill 50% of the chickens while half the tribe is not there.
Chickens. Okay.
Okay. Number 3. It is amazing what you can convince people to believe. Hashtag fake idol. Okay.
Okay.
And number four, it is odd to see someone fight so hard in challenges because she wants to leave. Hashtag Survivor.
All right. Okay. So what was number two again? Two was about the chickens, right?
How to start a fight on Survivor. Kill 50% of the chickens while half the tribe is not there.
I think that's definitely a Rupert tweet because okay. he's all about the chickens and the food and what's fair. And I think that would make him roar. And yeah, I think that that's a Rupert tweet. So I'm going to say that one's okay. I'm gonna say that one's real.
All right.
I'm going to say that he would find it very odd that Jen was fighting to stay in when obviously she's a quitter. That seems like something that would appeal to Rupert's sensibilities about, you know, being in it to win it and being there for the right reasons. And yeah, I'd say that's a real one for sure. So it's just between Candy and the fake idol. Let me think. You know what? I don't think Rupert cares about candy bars. I don't think he's going to be talking about Mr. Goodbar. That seems really out of character for him. And plus, it was like, say it again. It seems to.
With all that candy on the reward, where's my favorite candy bar, Mr. Goodbar? Hashtag Survivor.
I think he would have more candy bar hashtags in there if this were a real Rupert tweet as well. He would be like, hashtag delicious.
You don't think he's angling for a Mr. Goodbar sponsorship?
No, I don't. And that seems like a really random, like, candy bar to make his favorite as well. Like, that seems like a, I don't know. Like, I can't remember the last time I saw Mr. Goodbar. I don't know if I've ever seen one. Maybe they're just not popular up here. But I'm going to say the fake idol one is the real Rupert tweet. And then the candy bar is the fake out.
You're not banking on that Mr. Goodbar being much more popular in America than Canada?
No, I'm not banking on that.
Okay, that's your final answer?
That's my final answer. Okay.
All right, four weeks in a row.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert tweets. They're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I thought if it was so out there, I thought maybe that it would I could either go with something that's so out there that you think, well, that's so out there, he had to have said that. Or I could make it so boring. It's like, yeah, he probably would have said that, but is that the fake one? All right.
No,
good job. Good job. I'm slumping.
No, it was accurately boring. It was out of character for him to be talking about chocolate.
I need to start crowdsourcing the fake Rupert tweets. So I need people to start giving me good fake Rupert tweets to do on the podcast.
That's a good idea. Okay. That would make it really hard, I think.
All right.
I want people to fail, right?
I want people to lose.
Yeah.
I want people to lose.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Paul Borges. That's got your name on it. Okay. All right. Spencer tweeted, last two reasons for quitting Survivor. One, stole trail mix. Two, Trish is annoying. Jen can't do worse.
You killed my chicken, Shirley.
Yes. All right, we had Penner on the show, but here's some Penner tweets. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's Penner's tweets from this week. He said, Mike's been dreaming about Snickers. I believe it. You're too totally deprived of fats and sugars and sex, of course. Okay.
Yeah, that is odd that he's out there dreaming of Snickers when he hasn't had sex in 8 years. That is very it's not your prototypical kind of male response there.
Hey, if you have enough Snickers, then you'll be satisfied.
I guess you will.
That's the best commercial there is.
Fixes everything.
All right. Penner also said about Survivor, he said, I still say that necklace looks like something you'd make at Michael's hobby shop. Not quite Hobby Lobby ugly. I don't know. Hobby Lobby ugly?
I don't even know what that means. What is Hobby Lobby?
I don't know. Is it like?
I know Michael's. I don't know Hobby Lobby.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. All right. Then we had some We had some tweets from the current cast that Rodney at Rodney underscore Boston said, "How you like that? Told you that I'm putting on my De Niro right now." That's about the impressions. Yeah,
I believe that. I bet he's got some really good movie star impressions.
Yes. Also, that we also had at Joe Anglem said, "My hashtag Dirty 30, most amazing time playing with one of the best casts and some of the craziest, funniest, greatest people. Hashtag $1 million experience."
Aw.
Okay.
Did you see his Ponderosa video?
I did.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry, but it was
upsetting.
I told him when I talked to him, I said, you know, I really saw your passion about wanting to play in the game.
Ripped my heart out watching him just lose it.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah. You know, it's
the game, I guess.
Yes. It would be sad if the book was written on Joe. I feel like it's less sad than it potentially could be.
No, I know. I hear what you're saying with that.
Okay. And then here's one from Max Dawson at FY Maxwell says, Tyler can stand motionless doing nothing for days. He's got this one in the bag. Hashtag survivor. Where's my oh the shade shots fired sound effect?
Wow, that's amazing. He means the challenge, obviously, of standing there for sitting on his head, right?
Yeah. Yes. Is there tension there? Is there friction between Max and Tyler? White collar crime?
Oh, I doubt it. I think that's just Max trying to be clever. And that was a funny tweet. Okay. You gotta give him that.
All right.
Tyler is pretty invisible, I gotta say.
All right, Angie. You've done a great job here today. That we've gone on and on and on. Probably way too much time than I had budgeted for this. But we were on a roll. I need a hashtag for this episode. I've got some candidates for you. Okay.
What are you thinking?
All right. Hashtag number one.
Numbers loophole.
Okay. Numbers loophole. Mm-hmm. All right. Number two. Fantastically terrible. Okay.
Yeah.
Number three, Mr. Goodbar.
All right.
And number four, Hobby Lobby Ugly.
I like Numbers Loophole.
Numbers Loophole. Are they going to go with Hobby Lobby?
Numbers Ugly? Loophole.
Hobby Lobby Ugly.
You know,
Hobby Lobby Ugly.
You don't think it's too long?
What's that? Hobby Lobby Ugly?
Hobby Lobby Ugly.
I mean, it's Hobby Lobby Ugly and Numbers Loophole are pretty, I think, pretty close.
You're right. Let's do the Hobby. Let's do the Hobby Lobby.
I believe Numbers Loophole and is actually that's 15 characters. Hobby Lobby Ugly, I think, is 14.
Oh, Rob's the super van who can count.
Yes. Yeah, it's just, I'm not just another Survivor fan that can't count.
No, you can do the math.
Yes. All right.
You're
so
constantly running numbers.
So you like Hobby Lobby Ugly.
Yes. Let's do
it. All right, Angie. Fantastic. Okay.
That was so much fun. Thank you.
Very, very fun. So let's just reset what's coming up here. So we have coming up this weekend. We have a lot going on here on both RHAP and on Post Show Recap. I'm going to be getting together with Spicen once again. What's your take on Spicen Hour? Are you a fan?
I like it. I don't catch everyone, but I think it's a lot of fun. I would watch Tyson do anything. So,
okay.
Yeah, big fan.
All right, Tyson and Spencer and I are going to Spencer Pratt, not that Spencer, not Survivor Spencer or Big Brother Spencer. We are going to be talking about God knows what coming up on the Spicen Hour, which I believe we're going to be recording on Sunday afternoon. Then Sunday night, it's time for Game of Thrones. Angie, do you watch the Game of Thrones?
I'm really behind, so no.
Okay.
But I've made promises that I'm going to catch up. So
can't imagine you're such a big Walking Dead super fan and won't even catch up on Game of Thrones.
You know what? Because you know me, I don't have cable, so I have to go do it through iTunes. I resent the fact that it costs more and there's fewer seasons than so many other shows. And I'm a cheapo depot.
Oh, don't be a cheapo depot. Get on board. Game of Thrones live coming up at 10:15 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, and then it's time to do it all over again, and we'll get back into Big Brother Canada coming up. We're going to speak with Netta this Tuesday on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, Jessica, Lisa, and I are going to be speaking with the reigning Amazing Race winners this Monday night live at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And then Stephen and I will be back together for Survivor Know-It-Alls this Wednesday.
That's very exciting.
Boom. And then
stuff.
Also, Survivor is teasing that this twist is coming, Angie.
I can't wait for the twist. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it could possibly be.
I didn't want to speculate on it too much in this episode because I've heard some things. I don't know what is, you know, in commercials and spoilers or what. So I figured let's just wait until Wednesday and see what it is.
I like things just to reveal themselves to me. I try not to think my way through things before they happen. I like the surprise of it.
All right. Well, Angie, great job. Follow Angie on Twitter. She's at Angie Conce. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. At AngieCaunce. Correct?
That's me.
Boom.
Boom.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Okay. So Angie, and then also, if you have Walking Dead questions, also, Angie is working on a very comprehensive Walking Dead. Basically, you're like going to become the comic book girl 19 of Walking Dead.
I hope so.
Yes. Wow. Amazing. All right. So, Angie, thank you so much. We're looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Also, if you are interested in getting on board and being a patron, next patron cast is coming up 1 week from Tuesday. I believe that's the 28th. So you can go ahead and that's the one show a month when you guys can call in and ask me any questions you want. And we can talk about, we get into some good stuff, right, Angie?
We do. Sup, patrons?
Yes. All right.
No.
All right. Awesome. So for more information on that, go to robiswebsite.com/patron. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.